Why don't you tell us about what Neuroplanes is doing now in their new album?
So at the moment we've just got our first ever record deal with a small indie label called Smart Indie, who are based up in Scotland. So for the first time ever, we are going into a proper studio rather than just recording stuff at home like we used to do. And we're making a full, probably 12-track album.
I think we haven't quite finished the last track yet, have we? So that's kind of a work in progress at the moment.
But
we've got 11 of the songs down at the moment in the studio, for the drums and bass anyway. And we're going to be continuing with that this weekend, actually.
Yeah.
So this is a full LP then. This isn't just four or five songs. You guys are going the whole gamut.
Yeah. Well, we did an EP before. And that was like the first thing that we ever recorded, really, as a group. But we've been wanting to do this for a long time. We've been kind of building up material and not wanting to sort of just play it live, but get it recorded and put it out there. So we thought the only thing for it is to do an album. And even with that many tracks on it, like, it's actually going to be quite hard to choose which ones are going to go on and which ones are going to stay off.
Now, are you going to include your recent AA package, So Rewind, to Keep You Away, or is it going to be completely stuff that's unreleased right now?
I think most of it's going to be unreleased stuff, but yeah, I think we're probably going to put on So Rewind.
We haven't fully decided on that yet, though.
We've had a really good reception from that, actually, from the AA side. Because that's kind of, as you can, like, as I was saying, like, we've just really had like a lot of material that we wanted to get out there, so we at least put out a double A side before the album so that we could put some new material out, because it had been a while since we'd released anything. It's really nice for us, really, because we can actually go into do it properly for once. In the past, we've always been working on a really tight budget and recording stuff at home, and now we're actually making a proper go of it, and it's sounding really good so far.
Now, so Rewind and Keep You Away, I mean, that doesn't sound small budget though. I mean, that sounds pro. I'm serious. I mean, we're spinning both tracks on our stations right now. So, I mean, we don't, usually, I mean, we're pretty stringent here on quality of song and quality of audio. So how were you able to achieve that on such a tiny budget?
Well, we recorded So Rewind and Keep You Anyway in two different locations. The first location was actually Charlie's bedroom.
Oh, wow.
So we got the bass down there and the drums as well. And the second location was actually the studio that we're currently working in at the moment. Although we didn't record anything there, we mixed it there. And the guy, Chris Daniels, who's kind of the studio engineer, he did the mastering for it there as well.
Yeah, so I think like, we, I mean, really, like, as a band, we're all quite geeky, so we're quite into the music tech side of it, and we really enjoy using the software and doing all the techie stuff and using mics and stuff. But when it comes down to it, like, it's good to have someone who really does know their stuff. And the guy that we're working with, Chris, used to work in Abbey Road Studios.
Oh, wow, Beatles. Nice. Store.
So he's, he really knows his stuff. And he's. I think that's probably what gives those tracks the professional sound is his input onto them.
Now, I got to ask, I've been in a lot of home recording situations using Pro Tools, Audition, so on and so forth. With guitars and bass and keys, it's really easy because you can direct box it. But how did you do the drums? I mean, was it an acoustic set? Because, I mean, it has a robust sound to it.
Yeah, I mean, we tried some different things. So what we actually ended up doing is mixing together some actual real sounds of drums and tambourines and stuff. And then some of it is electronic stuff that's created on the software. So using an electronic drum kit to program it in, and then just using samples.
Oh, okay. So were you using triggers as well? Mic,
exactly.
And everything?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I just one of those like Roland electronic drum kit. So we used some of the sounds off that. Some of the sounds were real. So it ends up creating a drum sound that you're not. Yes, it sounds more real than a normal electronic kit because some of it is real. So yeah, but now in the new album, we've gone all the way over to you know, miking the whole thing up and doing it all properly. So I'm really pleased to be doing that because it kind of fits with our band, really, that we want to kind of keep everything as real as possible.
And you can really tell the difference as well, can't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Nice. Now, with the recording process now, how has it improved your sound now that you've got a budget, you're on a label, you're in an actual studio, you're working with an excellent engineer? How has your sound improved, do you think?
I think it's kind of early days at the moment because we haven't got too much finished. But I mean, just from what we've recorded so far, it frees us up to, so if we're not having to constantly be the ones who are pressing record and moving around on the timeline and stuff, it just means that we can concentrate much more on how it's actually sounding. And you know, we're all quite pedantic, really, in that we can whenever we hear a slight mistake, we can pick it out. So so I think that's one thing we've been doing much more now, is really listening. Like when someone else is recording, the other two are like actively listening to what the person's playing, so that the moment that there's a slight mistake, they can go back and go, no, okay, that needs to change, or you know, that kind of thing. So I think the quality is definitely going up, but I mean also it does free up a bit of time for like new ideas as well. So so I think there's, you know, it's, although we're saying that the songs are done, like they're not, I've done the drums for them, but actually it's perfectly possible that like we'll just come up with some new stuff, new ideas for what's going to go on top of the drums as we're recording it, and you know, having an engineer there really helps to do that, because you can just, you know, think about new stuff.
Now, has that helped out with song evolution then? Because you were talking earlier about how it helps you frees you up for ideas. Has it really improved the songwriting process during the recording process?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're really continuing to write the songs as we go along in the recording process. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, as Stuart said, they can just change. You know, Charlie might come up with, you know, a lyric idea that, you know, requires a new bit, a new guitar part and drum part. So, you know, we can quite easily go back and add that in. So, yeah, it has changed the songwriting process as well, I'd say.
So when is the album going to be released, and do you have a name yet?
First question, June, I think, but that's not you know, set in stone yet. So that's what we're kind of working on at the moment, because we're going to hopefully do a bit of a tour as well to support it. But in terms of the name, no, we're not there yet.
Well, can you give us a few titles of some of the songs that are definitely going to be on it, or is that top secret as of right now?
There's two songs that we played on another radio station recently in a live lounge session, and one of them's called Evermore, and the other one's called Let It Die. Those are really the only solid names that we've come up with at the moment, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think those two, especially Let It Die, we've been playing live for a fair while now, and that's kind of probably the most tried and tested song out of all the new ones that we're putting on there. Yeah, just judging from people's reaction to it when we play it live, we're really confident about that one, and really happy to have it on the album.
Nice. Well, I'd like to switch gears a little bit here. Now that we've talked about what you're doing now and how everything has come to this, I'd like to know how Narrow Planes got its start.
Yeah, well, Stuart and I are actually brothers. We started playing music together when we were, you know, quite young, maybe 11 and 13 years old.
Yeah,
And Stuart was actually in a band with me when we were at school. That's kind of the first band that we both were in. And there's this rock competition at school called Monsters of Rock that, you know, everybody wanted to be involved with, and everyone was desperate to get into a band. So that's where it all kind of began. And then I kind of kicked Stuart out of the band.
Yeah, really. He did. Yeah. We were playing in a band together, and then Roger realized that it wasn't very cool to be in a band with your brother when you're at school, especially your younger brother. So he threw me out of the band and replaced me with someone in his own year at school.
Now, is that hard with you guys being brothers? Because here's the funny thing. I mean, I'm a guitar player. My brother's a bass player, and we've tried that out so many times, and it never works out with us together.
I think one of the things that's quite useful for us really is that, like, we're used to telling each other stuff how it is, really. You know, we don't kind of dress things up. If something sounds awful, we'll just be like, no, that sounds awful. You know, and so you're not worried about annoying the other person because you've had a whole life with them, you know, annoying each other and just being honest with each other, even if it's not going to make the other person happy.
there's no sugarcoating in that.
Yeah, which is actually quite useful in a songwriting process because, you know, you have to get through quite a lot of ideas, and you know, or some of them are not going to be good ideas. It's just inevitable that, like, you know, half the ideas you're going to come up with aren't going to be particularly good. But that means that if you can get through those ones, then eventually you'll get into some really good ones. And I think, you know, that's one good thing in our songwriting process is that we're pretty brutal with each other.
Well, then how does that feel with Charlie though, being odd man out? You guys actually being blood.
I don't know. To be honest, he's probably even worse than us in terms of being critical and stuff. So, I mean,
we've also known Charlie a very long time. So after Stuart, you know, left my band, which I think he was, you know, kind of half happy to leave, really, because it gave him the opportunity to, you know, make his own band in his own year. And that's when Charlie really arrived at the same school as us.
So, I think that we were probably only like 14 at that stage. So, so that's when Charlie was like starting to learn guitar and we got into a band together then and started doing songwriting together. So really, like, you know, I've been playing music with Charlie, you know, almost as long as I've been playing music with Roger, really. So just musically, there is, although the band's only been going for a few years, like, we've all been actually, you know, playing music with each other for a very long time.
Yeah. I've actually got this kind of vague memory as well of, Charlie coming to our house for, you know, one of the first times, and I just bought this brand new electric guitar from this catalog. It's, you know, really cheap guitar and amp combination. And I remember him kind of coming upstairs and sit there watching me play it. And I think I actually taught him like his first few chords. So there's always been a kind of musical connection between the three of us.
Yeah.
So you've all kind of helped each other evolve then from the beginning.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and for a while, like, me and Charlie were just playing in a two-piece band, which was really, you know, it was quite different, really. It was just him on acoustic guitar and me playing a cajon, one of those box things that you sit on, and we just kind of, yeah, we're just doing like acoustic duo stuff and going around a few, because this is when we were at university, so we were both like opposite ends of the country, so we had to go and, like, you know, travel quite a lot to go and see each other, but we would always play some shows at our different universities and had little followings there, and that was quite important to just kind of keep it going whilst we were, you know, the separate universities. And then as soon as we finished university, then we got back into it properly.
Now let's talk about when you guys formed and actually became Narrow Planes. How did you form it together, okay, I'm gonna have to cut this out because I gotta reword my question. I'm sorry. How did Narrow Planes officially form, and how have you built your following, and how have you led everything up to this moment with the being on a record label and actually recording a full-length album?
Well, it really formed when Stuart and Charlie decided that they wanted to record some of the songs that they'd been working on when, you know, they were traveling to each other's unis and, you know, doing the odd open mic night. They decided they wanted to add a bit more depth to the sound, and that they needed a bass player. So that's when they kind of approached me, and I'd never actually played bass before. I'd always, you know, been a guitar player. So, I was fairly up for the challenge because I've always, you know, liked the way, you know, the instrument sounds. And so I got myself a bass and gave it a go. And, we recorded the five songs.
We weren't even sure really that we were going to be putting it out. We were pretty much just having some fun, really. And just, you know, we just wanted to see what the songs would sound like recorded, really. And so I think we went to my grandma's house, our grandma's house, and she was somewhere else for a week, so she let us have her house, and we just kind of turned it upside down and got all of equipment in there, and yeah, hopefully she hasn't seen any of the photos of how how full it was of stuff. But yeah, we just kind of laid all the tracks down, and as we were moving through the process of recording, we started realizing that, you know, actually this might actually be releasable, and that other people might want to listen to it. And it was only when we got right to the end that that we thought, oh, actually, yeah, like, we showed it to a few people and people were like, yeah, no, I would actually pay money for that. So so at that point we then looked into like how we would actually make this work in terms of getting it online and you know, getting it on iTunes and Spotify and all that sort of stuff. And even then, it wasn't definite that we were actually going to be a band properly or anything. It all just sort of fell into place, really. And of course, Twitter was pretty important in that as well. So once we got the stuff online, we wanted to gauge the response, and it was pretty huge. I mean, it was kind of you know, it's definitely a word of mouth thing at the beginning. We all had Twitter attached to our phones. We still do, but at that point we had it buzzing every time anyone mentioned us. And I remember we were around at Charlie's house having a band practice, and you know, every couple of minutes all of our phones would buzz. And we were just like, oh my god, someone else is listening to our music, awesome.
And it might have been someone from, you know, the other side of the world, which makes it doubly as cool, really.
What's your opinion on how social media has either embraced or helped or even hurt the unsigned artist versus 20 years ago when it was literally flyers on the wall?
I think you're right, it's kind of mixed actually, because on the plus side, you know, we've got fans from all over the world now, and we've got a much wider audience, and probably more people getting into our stuff, because people who are just naturally into our sound might not necessarily be all in the same place, in the same city, you know, they're all over the place. And so that's good, because it gives us a really good reach, and it means that small bands like us can get, you know, the support to kind of help us get stuff released. But on the other side, it does mean that it's harder to like build a scene. So I think, you know, in the past, you know, bands used to get together in one location and just build a scene and have all the fans coming to all of the gigs all the time. Nowadays, it's a lot harder, because, you know, to actually get people physically in the same place and listening to the same music all together is it's not as easy, really.
Yeah, because I remember when I was doing the active band thing was in the late 90s, and for us, it, like, that was when the internet was first taking off. So for us, it was literally, you know, go to a town and then plaster that whole town with flyers. Like beg the radio stations for a few minutes of airtime and just whatever you could do. And now it seems like it's all point and click, and you know, you can just, you know, get it out there through word of mouth. You know, having said that, do you feel it's better to be an unsigned artist or an independent artist than to be on a major label like Capitol, Sony, you know, Vivendi, you know, so on and so forth? I know you guys are on an indie label, so you guys are kind of in, you know, in between.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we've all said that we would never want to sign up to a record deal that kind of restricted us in terms of what we could and couldn't do musically. And I think that's why it's really important for us to be on a small label at the moment, because, you know, it doesn't constrain us. They like our music and they want us to record it, basically. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, you know? They give us a lot of artistic freedom, really. There's this guy called Phil Shaw who runs Smart Indie, who we're signed to. And yeah, he's just, you know, really chilled out guy, and just,
he's a music fan, really.
Yeah, exactly. He's in it for the music.
Yeah, and so yeah, I think we would definitely have a problem if we had a label that said, right, you guys, you're sounding good, but you need to do this, this, and this, and you know, add another three members to the band or something like that.
And I feel like major labels really do that. You know, they tell you what clothes to wear, you know, how they want your music to sound. So.
Now, where do you feel the future of the music industry is with the internet and with social media and independent labels like Smart Indie on the rise? Because they're the ones, they are taking things over. If you notice, the major labels are in panic mode and have been for the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is an interesting thing because, I mean, you know, music is a lot easier to get. You know, if you listen to music on Spotify, it's, you know, it's not as much money goes into the system as before, and not as much money will go to the labels as before. But then also not as much money goes to the artist as before. So it's difficult, really, because, you know, a lot of people see musicians as, you know, especially people who are in big bands as being really wealthy and all that sort of thing. But actually, surprising how little some of them will make out of their record deals. I think that one thing it makes really important is just live music, because that's how you're going to make your living now as a musician. You're not really going to make your living from selling stuff, so from selling recorded material anymore. But that's, you know, that's, I think that's actually not such a bad thing, because we love live music and we love playing live, and we'd happily do that forever, you know. And so, you know, at least we're not in a position where, you know, major labels are controlling that sort of thing. You know, doing live gigs, thankfully, is something that you know, anyone can put on, really. As long as you get enough people to come to a place, then you've got yourself a gig and people will pay to see it, and you can have yourself a career. So you don't actually, you know, necessarily need the major labels, really.
And then don't you think that it's a lot easier to focus on the live playing, because that improves a band musically? Not just steady work, but I'm saying, you know, you get a feel for each other better, and you can see where each other's coming from musically, and you get, you know, you can hone your skills together and become a better band.
Yeah. So, the fact that, you know, we're not spending all our time recording, gives us more time to practice together and, you know, learn each other's musical behaviors.
Yeah.
So, you know, we gel much more as a group.
And we've been doing it for years as well. You know, it's, I think it is actually something that it's, you almost need to be able to anticipate what someone's going to play before they play it, you know, so when we're jamming and stuff, we can actually, we normally record all of our practices nowadays. So, because, you know, that's when actually some of the coolest stuff happens, because we've been playing together for so long, you know, you can look at each other and you can go, oh, yeah, he's going to go into a chorus now. And you can respond by it. So you know, we have jams now that actually pretty much create songs in one go. Yeah. Sometimes
pretty much psychic.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, so I've got to ask then, considering everything that we've just talked about, say Atlantic came to you guys and then offered you a deal, would you take it or would you stay where you're at?
It completely depends on the deal.
It's the standard, you know, you're the new kid on the block deal.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we'd probably hold out. I think we would, because we've got what we want at the moment, in terms of we've got the money to be able to record something to a decent standard, and we're able to play gigs. So I would say, you know, at the moment we would hold out and wait until we had our fan base behind us, and then once you got that, then you have more power as an artist, and you can actually negotiate a better deal with the label, rather than having one of those kind of deals where it's just like, we own you now.
yeah, slavery is not dead, that whole thing. You know, well, yeah, you know,
just look at One Direction, that's proof that slavery is not dead.
Yeah, exactly. Or cloning.
Those guys are not happy.
Exactly. Well, where can we find Narrow Planes? What do you guys have in store? I mean, we have the album coming out, you know, hopefully in June. Where do we see Narrow Planes beyond that?
I don't know. We're gonna do a tour around the UK. There is a small chance that we may be going over to the US actually for a short period. Because it's still in the works at the moment, but we won a competition to go over to North Carolina, to do a bit of recording with a guy called John Davenport, who's a big producer, so we may play a few gigs while we're out there, but
currently there's a few visas.
Yeah, it depends on the US government actually allowing us to have visas to perform while we're out there. So we have to give the embassy a call and get that sorted. But
we hope to anyway. It'd be a really good opportunity for us.
Yeah, and then after that, I think it just all depends on how well the album goes. Really, we're quite happy just to keep doing what we're doing. Really, and you know, we're able to sustain the band at this level, and we're really happy doing it. But if it kind of snowballs and gets bigger, then that would be amazing.
Now, do you have any plans to play like mainland Europe or anything like that as well? Or?
Not at the moment, but we'd like to. We have fans kind of all over the place, really. So yeah, we're always getting people saying, "Oh, come to Spain, come to France," you know. So and it's not far away from us, really. So so we probably at some point we'll pile into a van and just have a Euro trip. Yeah.